The Sound Kitchen.
Mmm, yummy.
It's the Sound Kitchen.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
And you're listening to the Sound Kitchen.
Yummy.
And Susan Owens Beef Cooking.
Bienvenue and welcome to the Sound Kitchen, where you never know what you'll be served. I'm Susan Owensby. It's Saturday, the 28th of September, the 271st day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. Can you believe it? There are only 94 days left in 2024 already. Time to start thinking about your New Year's resolutions for our special New Year's Day show. Before we get started, I have a question for you. How do you listen every week to the Sound Kitchen? Through our website, rfienglish.com? Do you click on the link in the Facebook pages? Or is it through one of those listening apps like Spotify and the like? Do you listen on your phone or from your computer? Let us know. We're just curious, that's all. Today is a big day in French history. On this day in 1066, the Duke of Normandy, later known as William the Conqueror, landed in England and thus began the Norman Conquest. William's army was made up of thousands of Norman, French, Flemish, and Breton troops. Why the invasion? Earlier in 1066, England's childless Anglo-Saxon king, Edward the Confessor, died. William was related to Edward, hence his claim to the English throne, and according to William and numerous scholars, Edward probably encouraged William's hopes for the throne. The conquest of England by the Normans was definitive with the Battle of Hastings, in which William the Conqueror's army was victorious. The Normans ruled England until 1154. A very interesting outcome of Norman rule in England came with the transformation of language. Anglo-Norman, a northern dialect of Old French with Nordic influences, became the language of the ruling classes in England, displacing Old English. Norman French words entered the English language, which we use to this day. One example is that all English words that end in T-I-O-N are, in fact, French, like attention, that's attention, or action, which is action. Listen to this. It's been estimated that up to 60% of the English vocabulary is of French origin. There is a beautiful tapestry that depicts the events leading up to the Norman conquest, known as the Bayeux Tapestry. It's been dated to a few years after the Battle of Hastings, and you can see it today at the Bayeux Tapestry Museum in Normandy. We call it a tapestry, but it is in fact an embroidered cloth. I guess it's called a tapestry because of its size. It's enormous, 70 meters long and 50 centimeters tall. I've been fortunate enough to see that tapestry, and it's glorious. Here is what Sylvette Lemagnien, the conservator of the tapestry, wrote about it. The Bayeux Tapestry is one of the supreme achievements of the Norman Romanesque period. Its survival, almost intact over nine centuries, is little short of miraculous. Its exceptional length, the harmony and freshness of its colors, its exquisite workmanship, and the genius of its guiding spirit combined to make it endlessly fascinating. I've put photos of it on the Sound Kitchen Facebook and the RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook pages, so you can enjoy it too.
This is the Sound Kitchen.
Sound Kitchen.
And Susan Owensby's cooking.
Paul Myers is taking a good long holiday after his hectic summer covering the Olympics. And Erwan Rome is off. David Brockway is with us today to mix the show. Coming up, the Listener's Corner and some fine music. But first...
Are you ready? I do hope so.
And so do I, because it's... time for the quiz. On the 29th of August, I asked you a question about the Paris 2024 Paralympics Games, which had just opened with a parade on the Champs-Élysées and a grand show put on by the Games artistic director Thomas Joly. You were to reread our article, Paralympic Torch Arrives in France Ahead of Opening Ceremony, and send in the answer to this question. How many athletes will compete in how many events? The answer is, to quote our article, during the games, around 4,400 athletes will compete in 549 events, which will take place in 18 competition sites, including 16 identical to their Olympic counterparts. In addition to the quiz question, there was the bonus question, with whom do you feel the happiest and why? Which was suggested by Jayanta Chakrabarty from New Delhi, India. You'll hear the answers later in the listener's corner, so don't touch that dial. The winners of this week's quiz are Razia Khalid, who's a member of the RFI Seven Stars Radio Listeners Club in District Chinio, Pakistan. Razia is also this week's bonus question winner. She wrote, "My husband makes me happy. Here are some reasons why. Emotional support and understanding. Shared laughter and adventures. Feeling loved and appreciated. Mutual respect and trust. Partnership in life's challenges and successes, thoughtful gestures and surprises, quality time spent together, support for personal growth and goals, feeling safe and secure, unconditional love." Wow, Razia, your husband sounds like, as my father used to say, a prince of a fellow, his highest compliment for members of the male species. Congratulations on your double win, Razia. Also on the list of lucky winners this week are M.N. Santu, a member of the RFI Amour Fan Club in Rajshahi, Bangladesh, and RFI Listeners Club member Kashif Khalil from Faisalabad, Pakistan. Last but certainly not least, two RFI English listeners from Bangladesh. Shahanan Owaz Parvin Ripa. She's the president of the Sonali Badhon Female Listeners Club in Bogora. And Shihab Uddin Khan from Naugaon. Congratulations to this week's winners, and thanks to each and every one of you who wrote in. On Alison Hurd and Sarah Elzis' most recent Spotlight on France podcast, Alison produced a piece on France's current governmental crisis and the lack of an ability in the French political landscape to compromise. As Alison noted, France does not have the tradition of coalition building more commonly found in Germany, Switzerland, and the Nordic countries. As social scientist Loïc Blondiot told Le Monde, and I quote, "The idea of deliberation, organized, reasoned debate in the form of an exchange of arguments, has never had the force and legitimacy in France that it has in other countries. A specific trait of our political culture is, on the contrary, contempt for consensus. Compromise is often seen as synonymous with giving in and weakness," end quote. You can see that in everyday life here. It is very hard for a French person to say, "I'm sorry." They usually try to blame their error on you. It's one of the more unpleasant characteristics of the French, and one that's taken me years to figure out how to deal with politely and non-confrontationally. Back to politics, as Alison noted, France's current system, known as the Fifth Republic, strengthened the executive branch, making the National Assembly an extension of the president's will. This is also not conducive to compromise. I want you to re-listen to Alison's piece on Spotlight on France number 115 and send in the answer to this question. How many political groups are in the National Assembly today? By the way, it's a record. You can also refer to Allison's article, Where Did France's Culture of Political Compromise Go? And Is It Coming Back? To help you with the answer. But hey, we're all radio lovers, so listen to the podcast. Again, listen to Allison Hurd's piece on Spotlight on France number 115 and send in the answer to this question. How many political groups are in the National Assembly today? You'll find the Spotlight on France podcast, as well as Allison's article, on the Sound Kitchen page on our website, rfienglish.com, and on the Sound Kitchen and the RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook pages. Good luck! This week's bonus question is, what is the most wonderful thing you've ever seen in a museum? Was it the most beautiful thing? The most interesting thing? Something that moved you beyond anything else? What is the most wonderful thing you've ever seen in a museum? I can tell you mine immediately. It was, in fact, another person. I often go to the Guimet National Museum of Asian Arts here, as I find looking at the statues of serene Buddhas incredibly peaceful. You're not allowed to touch them. On one of my visits, there was a tour for blind people, and the museum allowed them to touch the sculptures. There was a friend with each blind person who explained the features of the sculpture as they were touched, and you could see on the faces of the blind people how much they were enjoying the feel of, and therefore the knowledge of, centuries-old sculptures. It was very moving. I think I even cried a little. What about you? What is the most wonderful thing you've seen in a museum? And don't forget, we're happy to hear your ideas for bonus questions, so please send them in. You have until the 21st of October to get your answers to the quiz and the bonus question to me. Be sure to tune in on the 26th of October to hear if your answer wins a prize. As always, be sure you include your postal address with your postal code. And don't forget to let me know if you are a Miss, a Ms., a Mrs., or a Mr. I don't want to get it wrong.
Send your quiz answers to english.service@rfi.fr. That's english.service@rfi.fr. You can also text your answer to the Sound Kitchen mobile phone. Dial +336 31 12 9682. That's +336 31 12 9682. Always include your postal mailing address, and if you have one, your RFI Club membership number.
تاسو اورئ سوزنز بی دا ساؤنڈ کچن پروگرام کے ریڈیو فرانس انٹرنیشنل سرا.
یو نو وٹ دیٹ مینز. اٹس ٹائم فار دا لسنرز کارنر. The question you answered this week, with whom do you feel the happiest and why, was suggested by Jayanta Chakrabarty from New Delhi, India. So let's start with Jayanta. For him, it's not a person, but nature. This is what he wrote. I feel the happiest when I'm in the midst of nature. The experience is even more exciting than in the company of living beings. Yes, the call of the mountains brings the most joyous moments to my life. Thus, I make a yearly trip to Lansdowne. Surrounded by mesmerizing snow cloud mountains and a forest of majestic cedar and silver trees, this heavenly place is nestled in the lap of the mighty Himalayas in the north Indian state of Uttarakhand. The quiet and mysterious environs, only disturbed by the occasional fleeting of chirping birds, add to the beauty. Here I have peace of mind, away from the tumultuous world. I can freely talk with my soul and discover myself anew. This is my happiest moment. The question was really about people, though, and most of you said your family. That's the case for Helmut Matt, who wrote, "I have friends, neighbors, acquaintances, lots of people with whom I'm happy in their company. However, I'm happiest with my wife, Linda, and we've been married for almost 40 years now." Falling in love is a feeling that most people know. Human hormones make sure of that. But love itself is the power of the good and of eternity, a power of the human heart and soul. It connects people as long as they allow it to dwell in their hearts. And it connects people far beyond the time of their first falling in love. That's why I'm happiest with Linda. I am firmly convinced that it'll stay that way for the rest of our lives. Linda, you're a lucky woman. Radhakrishna Pillai agrees. He wrote, "Even though I have many friends, I am most happy when I'm with my family. It's a safe space to share and communicate. I can share all my feelings with them." Malik Alabachaya Kokar wrote, "Family, because they always assist me." For Rodrigo Hunriche, it's in the company of his friends. And for Father Stephen Wara, it's twofold. He wrote, "I am going plural on this question. I feel the happiest first with the close members of my family. They're the ones I've lived and interacted with in the closest ranks of affection since the day of my birth. And then my brothers in my religious community. These are the single two groups of people who have chartered and shaped the course of my life. For better or worse, but I betcha it's been enormously for the better. And for that, I'm deeply grateful to and appreciate them all. May God bless and reward you abundantly, dear parents and superiors, sisters and brothers." How about a specific member of the family? For Dipita Chakrabarty, it's her mother. She wrote, "I feel the happiest when I'm in the company of my mother. That happens only when I go to my parents' house in Kolkata, and that is not too often. The joyful experience of being close to her is beyond words. The love and care I receive are the same as in my younger days." And it's mom for Rafik Kondekar, too. He wrote, "I am happiest when I see my mother's face." Let's end with Kashif Khalil, who very sweetly wrote, "For me, I always feel happiest with my small daughter, because when she looks at me with a smile on her face, all my exhaustion is removed." And there you have it. Remember, everyone, this week's bonus question is, what is the most wonderful thing you have seen in a museum? Do you have a bonus question idea? If so, send it to us at The Sound Kitchen, all one word, no spaces, at rfi.fr. That's it for today's Listener's Corner. Thanks, everyone, for participating.
My name is Ignatius Nji. I live in Bamenda, Cameroon, in Africa. I love RFI.
Okay, my friends, it's time to clear the table and wash the dishes. Thanks for joining me in the Sound Kitchen, and keep those cards, letters, emails, and text messages coming. Many thanks to David Brockway for mixing the show, and thanks to you for listening. Be sure and tune in next week, the 5th of October, for the answer to the question about the medals won by the French para-triathletes in the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games. The Sound Kitchen podcast is ready for you every Saturday on the RFI English website, rfienglish.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today, it's Music from Susan, which I'll dedicate to a new friend, Florent Moti. He's a gifted freelance TV documentalist. You can see his reportage on the RFI sister station, France 24, both in French and English from time to time. I've put two of his recent pieces on the Sound Kitchen and the RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook pages. They're really quite interesting. As is he, in addition to being charming. How fun to make a new friend. He introduced me to a French-American jazz singer, Cécile McLaurin-Salvin. whose voice is as smooth as silk. Florent recommended her version of the Rodgers and Hart classic, I Didn't Know What Time It Was, a bit of an inside joke as we misunderstood each other about time and missed a concert we were supposed to go to. But that's okay. We had a good time at dinner. Thanks, Florent, for the tip. Here it is, I Didn't Know What Time It Was by Rodgers and Hart, sung by Cecile McLaurin-Salvant. I bet you're going to fall in love with her voice, too. I'm Susan Owensby. Be well, do good work, be kind, and stay in touch. And remember, do not confuse human beings, our brothers and sisters, with their governments. Stay safe, my friends. Talk to y'all next week.
I didn't know what time it was then I met you. Oh, what a lovely time it was. How sublime it was too. I didn't know what day it was you held my hand. Warm like the month of May it was, and I'll say it was grand, grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all your own. I did not know what year it was, life was no prize. I wanted love and there it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise and I know what time it is now. Oh, what? it was, how sublime it was too. I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand, warm like the month of May it was, and I'll say it was grand, grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, hear your voice, feel your touch, say I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was. Life was no prize. I wanted love, and there it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise.